This program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer, list of today's guests, signing in chat room, lining up news articles, checking level, adjusting cam, secure wire connection, restart computer, checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
Well, if I had any musical talent at all, but it's a good thing that I've got some technical skills because, oh my God, if I had the day from hell. I've been struggling with a camera problem. My good camera that I usually use all of a sudden, like a week ago, got corrupted. And when I say corrupted, I mean corrupt. I could bring up the shot and you'd see. But it's just take my word for it. It's not working. It works on the computer. It just doesn't work in the program that I use to stream video for the show. And so I've been playing troubleshooting with Logitech, who makes the camera, and with Wirecast, Telestream, who makes Wirecast, the program that I use, and nobody can figure it out. Well, the Wirecast people allegedly sent me an easy fix today and said, just, I don't know, reset the settings or whatever the terminology was. And he said, don't worry, you'll lose your recent documents, but everything will stay the same. Everything will be fine. But it wasn't. I lost everything. And so now I'm still using my shitty backup camera and I lost everything. So I spent like an hour trying to rebuild the shots that I use in the show. And then finally, I found one of the missing documents and was able to bring it. But just suffice it to say, it was a frustrating, frustrating day. And that happened after I lost my show sheet. So my show sheet, just so you know, when I start the day at like 6:30 in the morning, going through the news, I pull a lot of stories from different sources. That becomes my script for what's news and my notes for the show. But I guess I didn't save the document before I had to reboot the computer and it's lost. Thankfully, I had already recorded what's news, but I couldn't tell you what's in there because, you know, too much stuff. So anyway, we're here. We made it on the air. We're streaming on all cylinders. It looks like, I don't know if we're up on, I think we're up on Facebook. Are we? We're there on Facebook. And I think on Twitter. So I guess we're okay. Howie Klein will be here today because it's Thursday. If you're wondering the latest out of Ukraine and Tatiana, I have not heard from her today. The last I heard from her was yesterday afternoon before the show when she said, we left 30 kilometers from Kyiv. We are hiding. And then I sent her a note. I said, good. I hope you're somewhere safe, sending love and safe thoughts. And then when I woke up this morning, I sent another note. I mean, I don't want to be a pest, but I wrote, good morning from Florida, thinking about you, hoping you're okay. That was it. 7:11 this morning, and I have not heard back from her. I'm worried, but I also don't want to be a pest. I understand they are hiding out underground, and I see the footage, and it's just, it is so awful. It's just so horrible that I can't help but think about what's going on over there. And so let me tell you what happened yesterday. So the show ends at 6:00. You know, I was all excited because I was going to tape an interview with Stevie Van Zandt, Miami Steve Van Zandt, little Steven, whatever you want to call him. But still, you know, the show was still fresh in my mind. And I'm in this war mode with my heart breaking for those people, frankly. And then I try to start to segue because, you know, it's hard to unplug from one thing and go immediately into the other, but, you know, you got to do it. You got to do it. So I checked out his Twitter feed and he's on Twitter at Stevie Van Zandt. And sure enough, his whole Twitter feed is about, you know, what's happening with Russia and Ukraine. And so that's how we began the interview. And I got to tell you, I hope it was good. I'll find out with you tomorrow when we play it. I'm not editing it. You're going to hear it exactly as it unfolded in its entirety, even the, you know, the awkward moments. And there were some because, you know, I have a hard time sometimes starting an interview, like getting into it, especially when I'm taping, because it's just an awkward, you know, it's an awkward thing, the transition. There wasn't too much awkwardness, but anyway, I'm not editing it. You'll hear it as it was, as if it were live. So it's going to run tomorrow. We spoke for the better part of an hour. I think it runs like 51 and a half minutes. So we cover a lot of territory. And yes, we start off with the world we're living in now. You know, Bruce Springsteen gets political, but in sort of a cryptic way. Steve Van Zandt pulls no punches. He tells you what he thinks. And you know, by the way, if you go on his Twitter stream, he'll tell you what he thinks. And he will engage with you. So I think you'll enjoy it. I don't want to give away anything because I think we'll enjoy it together tomorrow. And I'll tell you, it'll be a great way to start the weekend because though we start out talking about the news, talking about the war, talking about the insanity of Putin and the horror that is the life that people of Ukraine are living right now, we then move on and we talk music and we talk Sopranos and we talk everything. So anyway, I'm thrilled with it. I haven't finished the book yet, but I will because it's so good. The thing is now I have to segue because on Monday, Elie Mystal will be here and his new book is called Allow Me to Retort, A Black Guy's Guide to the Constitution. It just arrived today. So you know what I'm doing this weekend. Anyway, it never ends. And can you tell I'm stalling? I'm trying not to go there, but we have to go there. The situation in Ukraine is going from bad to worse. I mean, I'm terrified for Tatiana, and I will send her another note tonight. Again, I want her to know that we care. I don't want to be a pest, and I'm sure she's got more important things to do than to respond to my inquiries. But on the other hand, I think if I were in her shoes, I'd appreciate hearing from the outside world to know that we're not alone, that everyone's concerned about us. The thing is, where does the concern end and the action begin? And there, my friends, is the rub, as they say. You know, I'm a little, I don't know if I'm losing my progressive bona fides. You know what? Scratch that. I'm not. I care about these people. I think sometimes progressives, liberals, people on the left side of the political spectrum in this country, maybe take it a little too far in terms of, look, I want peace as much as anyone else. The thing is, Vladimir Putin sent his thugs into Ukraine to kill innocent people. They're using real weapons of mass destruction. They're using cluster bombs that are just to kill innocent people. So keeping that in mind, I want to share with you a Twitter thread from somebody that I've always respected. And that's Jeremy Scahill. Jeremy Scahill, who for years wrote for The Nation. These days, he's with The Intercept. Hold on, I want to get this thread. Because while I agree with him, let me read it to you. And then we can talk about it. Jeremy Scahill wrote just a few hours ago, a few thoughts about the issue of Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the credibility of the U.S. and NATO. He writes, Russia's invasion of Ukraine is a bald-faced act of aggression, replete with war crimes, and is rightly being condemned as such by large numbers of people and nations across the globe. The U.S. and other NATO nations are in a dubious position to claim moral high ground in condemning Russia's actions. While many statements from Western leaders may in fact be accurate regarding the nature of Russia's actions, they must be placed in the context of their own militarism and well-documented hypocrisy and moral bankruptcy. It's intellectually dishonest to ignore the broken promises from the U.S. and NATO regarding NATO expansion. It's lunacy to deny that Russia has legitimate security concerns posed by this expansion, even if it is in response to these concerns, It is lunacy to deny that Russia has legitimate security concerns, even if its response to these concerns is a heinous invasion. Got that out. Both can be true, Jeremy Scahill writes. He continues, during the 78-day NATO bombing of Serbia and Montenegro in 1999, the U.S.-led NATO alliance committed similar or identical acts that it is now condemning Russia for in Ukraine. President Clinton sidestepped both the U.S., both the U.N. and the U.S. Congress in initiating this bombing. Joe Biden was among its biggest cheerleaders. Under the command of U.S. General Wesley Clark, with whom I had a major disagreement on the air some years ago when I realized he was a warmonger, but I digress. Sorry, back to Jeremy Scahill. Under the command of Wesley Clark, NATO intentionally bombed radio television Serbia, killing 16 media workers, including technicians and makeup artists. This U.S.-led NATO force used internationally banned cluster bombs, including on a crowded marketplace in the city of Nice. The U.S.-led NATO force bombed a civilian passenger train and then released a doctored video, sped up to make it appear as though it was a mistake made in a split second. This was a total fabrication. Jeremy Scahill continues. The U.S. bombed the Chinese embassy, killing three journalists. The U.S.-led NATO force bombed bridges and civilian infrastructure repeatedly. These crimes committed by the U.S. and its NATO allies do not in any way excuse or justify Russia's aggression. At the same time, history and context matter. If the U.S. wants the moral high ground, it should cease its own ongoing war crimes and support for war crimes. This could begin with such actions as ending all support for Israel's aggression against Palestine and recognizing the Palestinians' legitimate right to self-defense. The U.S. could immediately end all support for Saudi Arabia and make it a pariah, as Biden promised. The U.S. could stop its drone strikes in Somalia and elsewhere. The systematic U.S. failure to accept responsibility for its own crimes undermines the credibility of its condemnation of Russia, particularly in the eyes of anyone who knows the history of NATO and U.S. militarism. It's a gift to Putin's cause. And Jeremy Scahill wraps up the thread by saying, there's no contradiction between standing with the people of Ukraine and against Russia's heinous invasion and being honest about the hypocrisy, war crimes, and militarism of the U.S. and NATO. Jeremy Scahill makes some good points. And as I wrote when I retweeted the thread, I said, while I agree with everything Jeremy Scahill says here, the fact is that I'm only concerned at this moment about all the innocent people being bombed in Ukraine. Now, I can't do anything about the past but criticize. But Putin must be stopped now, regardless of how we fucked up before. And yes, we did. This has nothing to do with that. Just like when someone, you know, when Trump was in office and I'd criticize him, it wasn't saying that anybody, that somebody else is any better, or it's not drawing a comparison. The two things are mutually exclusive. And I get that the U.S. has a very checkered past when it comes to waging war, as does NATO. But there comes a time when you have to look at the here and the now, and there are innocent people being murdered, being firebombed, hiding out in sub-basements lest they be killed by a bomb dropped on them because they live in Ukraine and won't bow at the feet of Vladimir Putin? We fucked up all through the past, all through history. It doesn't mean that hold on one second, caller. It doesn't mean that because we fucked up in the past, we can't step up and do the right thing now. I draw the line there. We need to do something to help these people. And it scares the shit out of me, because what I hear is, if we were to go in and take out that convoy that's sitting stalled just outside of Kyiv, allegedly 40 miles worth of tanks and military equipment, even though all the soldiers are going hungry and they don't have bathrooms, they can't shower, and they're running out of gas. If we were to take them out, that would be the start of World War III, because the two superpowers would be hitting each other. I don't know. I'm not a military person, thank God. I never want to be. And someday I'll play for you the interview I did with General Wesley Clark when I realized he was a fucking warmonger and I called him out on it live on the air. It's in the archives. If you go to, I think, if you go to my podcast page and you search Wesley Clark, the interview will probably come up. It's not fun, but it's there. All right, to the 818 area code. Who's calling from L.A.?
Hi, Pete Perlman. How are you?
Hey, Pete. I'm okay. How are you doing, Pete?
Good. I think what we need is a second Russian revolution. I think it's ripe for revolution, as a matter of fact, and that would be probably the best solution to this whole mess.
Yeah, but that's we can't do that. That's the Russian people who have to do that. And that's why Vladimir Zelensky spoke to the Russian people in Russian, hoping that the video, the message, would get through to them.
Yeah, so I'm sort of calling for it. That's all I could do. You know, I posted it on Facebook, and, you know, my own limited access to media, I'm calling you. I think the Russian, it wouldn't surprise me if things developed in that direction. In fact, they've been living in squalor for years. It's an oligarchy where most people are living in squalor. He's just a horrible leader, and everybody knows it over there. Even with their control of the media. And the people are finally getting a backbone. A super backbone. I don't want to minimize it.
Right.
It's a lot of bravery we're seeing over there. People coming forward and, you know, protesting despite the horrible consequences of doing so over there. I think that's what it's going to take. The guy's a maniac, and he needs to be overthrown.
Without a doubt. And hopefully the Russian people will see this. And the good news is that the protests, you know, people are getting arrested. Thousands of people have been arrested for protesting, but they're still doing it. And it's not only in Moscow and St. Petersburg, it's all over the country. And granted, they're not hearing everything that's going on because the media is severely censored there, but they are getting some of it. In fact, you know, I played some videos yesterday UATV. It's Ukrainian television in English. It's Ukrainian news. And they've got a bunch of videos up there of soldiers, Russians, that they have captured, who they're treating very well. Thank you very much. One of them even mentioned, I'm being treated a whole lot better by my captors than I was by my commanders.
Yeah, I heard that.
They're feeding them. They're letting them call home, you know, and these people were not told what they were being sent to do. These, in many cases, kids were told they're just going on a peacekeeping mission. And then they're sent in to carpet bomb innocent people in Ukraine. They're not happy. So I have to, and so we saw the one soldier call his mother and say, we were the aggressor. They didn't tell me I'm doing this. We came in here. We're the aggressors. Please let everybody know. And so hopefully as the word spreads throughout Russia, you know, people will rise up. I hope someone takes his ass out. I know it's hard to get near him. Even if you're in the inner circle, you're sitting, you know, at the end of a table 20 feet away from him because he's as whacked out as Trump was. But, you know, I hope somebody gets to him and takes him out, because that's the way we end this thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I just wanted to put that out there.
Well, thank you, Pete. Good to hear from you. Appreciate the call. Okay. Bye-bye. Phone lines are open. You know, Howie Klein will be along at the bottom of the hour. But during the first half hour of the show is when I do welcome your phone calls. But I want to share. I want to share a couple of things with you. Yesterday, I pulled the transcript of a video that at the time the only place I saw it was on TMZ of President Zelensky speaking about the bombing of this Holocaust memorial. Well, now the full video is up on that the UATV YouTube channel. I'm not going to play the whole thing for you because it is in Russian, but they do have, you know, they do have it translated, and you can hear him talking about, well, here, let me just play a little segment of it for you. So this is the translator's voice you hear over President Zelensky speaking in Ukrainian.
Greetings, Ukrainian people. The seventh day of the terrible war. We were all bombed in Kyiv last night, and we all died again in Babyn Yar from missile strike. Although the whole world promises constantly, never again. For any normal people who knows history, Babyn Yar is a special part of Kyiv, a special part of Europe, place of prayer, place of memory of 100,000 people who were killed by the Nazis, the place of the old Kyiv cemeteries. You are re-killing victims of the Holocaust.
You are re-killing
during the Soviet
victims
era,
of
TV
the Holocaust.
TV center was built there on the bones. Also, a sport complex, outbuildings. They made a park there to erase the true history of Babyn Yar. Why was it bombed? This is already beyond the bounds of humanity.
Right?
Such a missile strike indicates that for many people in Russia, our Kyiv is completely alien. They don't know anything about our capital, about our history. But they have orders to erase our history, erase our country, erase us all. On the first day of the war, Umань was bombed, where hundreds of thousands of Jews come every year to pray. Then Babi Yar, where 100,000 Jews were shot. All the Jews of the world, don't you see what is happening? It is very important that millions of Jews around the world do not remain silent now. Nazism is born in silence. Therefore, scream about the killing of civilians, about the murders in Ukraine.
Nazism is born in silence, he said. Therefore, scream about the killings, the murders of innocents, of innocent people here in Ukraine. You know, the whole thing is offensive on every front. It's offensive. The fact that Vladimir Putin is, you know, waging war on this innocent country. And in this case, they are innocent. They did nothing to provoke this. It's just reprehensible. But to make it worse, to make matters worse, he's saying, we're going to wipe out Nazism in Ukraine. Well, you know what? Bullshit. Bullshit. This is not about that. This is about Vladimir Putin's ego, and he wants to get the old gang back together and reconstitute the Soviet Union. He doesn't like people not bowing down at his feet. So to say we're denazifying Ukraine is bullshit. And I'm going to show you a video that I actually saw on CNN. And it's a bunch of old bubbas, grandmothers, Ukrainian grandmothers who survived World War II and the Nazis, the actual fucking Nazis, and are now being bombed by Russia. They're speaking Ukrainian. There are captions. There's closed captioning on the screen. But for those of you listening to the audio only, I'll do the role of the narrator speaking over the video. Those of you watching the video, you can ignore me. All right. So, and it's quick. It's only like 34 seconds. But I want you to look at these women's faces. Listen to their words. Again, these are old Jewish women who survived World War II somehow, only to be bombed by Putin in their home country. It's disgusting. Says, on June 22nd, 1942, during World War, I was in Kyiv being shelled. My relatives were killed in Babyn Yar. February 24th, 2022, I'm in Kyiv again being shelled. Putin, withdraw your army and get out from Ukraine. It's a horrifying monstrosity. Putin, I hope you die. Leave us alone, you bastard. I mean, what more do they need? Leave us alone, you bastard. Leave them the fuck alone. And so to hear people, you know, say, well, we can't wage war. No, I don't, believe me, last thing I want to do is shed more blood. But you can't let this shit continue either. It's just horrible. Still, as much as I like that video, this one is my favorite. And this was from last week, I guess, right after the invasion happened. And when I first heard about it, I thought, this is like an old wives' tale. This didn't really happen. But you know what? It really did, because it's on video, so we know it happened. Hold on, I got to get my the shot up here so I'm not cutting off any of it. Let's get me out of the way. Yeah, when you see this, you've heard about this story. You know that the sunflower is the Ukrainian national flower. And they take their sunflowers pretty seriously over there, apparently. And so let me just play this video again, subtitles, so I will narrate for you. But here's the video. It's in Kherson, Ukraine, which I think now is under Russian control. Oh, my God. A brave Ukrainian woman's confrontation with an invading Russian soldier has gone viral after she tried to gift them sunflower seeds for a heartbreaking reason. Who are you? She said. He said, we have exercises. Please go away. What kind of exercises? Are you Russian? Yes. So what the fuck are you doing here? Yes. Right now, our discussions will lead to nothing. You're occupants, she said. You're fascists. What the fuck are you doing on our land with all these guns? Take these seeds and put them in your pocket so at least sunflowers will grow when you all lie down here. Then he says, right now, our discussion is over. Let's not escalate this situation, please. What situation? She says, guys, put the sunflower seeds in your pockets, please. You will lie down here with the seeds. You came to my land. Do you understand? You are occupiers. You are enemies. You are cursed. I'm telling you. And from this moment, you are cursed. I'm telling you. I've heard you, she said. And he's saying, let's not escalate the situation. She says, how can it be further escalated? You fucking came here uninvited pieces of shit. I'm glad to know I'm not the only one with a foul mouth. That is reality. That is how people are feeling. You know what? I'd be doing the same exact thing. That woman is amazing. Is just amazing. So, it's almost time for Howie. I pulled audio from Bernie Sanders on Colbert. You know, I watched the State of the Union the other night. I don't know, I didn't say much about it. Honestly, at this point, I don't know what there is to say about it. I'll talk with Howie a little bit about it, so we'll get it out of the way, and maybe I'll play a couple of minutes of Bernie. He was on Colbert, who did a live show Tuesday night after the State of the Union, and so Bernie... No, he didn't do a response to the State of the Union, but he did appear on Colbert, so he wasn't in D.C. for the State of the Union address, and he was great. He was, you know, for all the talk, and I'm guilty of it. I criticize Joe Biden. He's a lousy speaker, and I get that he stutters. This is not about his stutter. It's because he's... And I believe he is mentally there. I don't think he's demented, or I don't think he's losing it. I just think he's old and a little slow. And sometimes, you know, that comes with age. Shit, it happens to me. Bernie Sanders, on the other hand, as sharp as a fucking tack. You know what? Let me just, I'll be a couple minutes late. Do I have it up here? Yeah, I'll be a couple minutes late for Howie. That's all right. Let me share with you a little bit of Bernie on with Colbert talking about the State of the Union. I think. Here we go. Come on.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. We're here with Senator Bernie Sanders on our live late show. All right. Senator, let's get to economics. Tonight, President Biden laid out his economic plan. It included cutting the cost of prescription drugs, cutting the cost of child care, making corporations pay their fair share. Is it fair to say that Biden was feeling the burn tonight? You're an expert.
Not enough.
You're an expert on the burn.
Well, these are, you know, before he took office, we had a task force of people from my campaign and his campaign working together on a set of proposals. And much of what he talked about tonight was just that. And here is the most important point. You know, we talk about being a divided nation. In many ways, that's true. But in some ways, Stephen, we are absolutely united. Everybody hates the drug companies.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows that it is absurd that we, in some cases, pay 10 times more for the same exact drug sold in Canada or Europe.
You think?
That one out of four Americans cannot afford the prescription drugs that their doctors prescribe. Meanwhile, the companies make tens of billions in profits and give huge compensation packages to their CEOs. And I want everybody to know this. We are struggling right now to lower the cost of prescription drugs. The mm-hmm. drug companies have spent at least $300 million on lobbyists alone.
Wow.
They got 1,500 lobbyists in Washington, D.C. to make sure that we continue paying the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. So when Biden says we got to lower the cost of prescription drugs, that Medicare's got to negotiate prices with the pharmaceutical industry, as the VA now does, the overwhelming majority of the American people support him. The overwhelming majority of the American people understand that it is absurd that families are paying $10,000, $15,000 a year
yep.
for child care.
Yep.
We've got to lower the cost of child care substantially. I believe we ought to expand Medicare to cover dental, hearing, and eyeglasses.
Now, you and Joe Biden obviously have different perspectives. If you were up there at that podium tonight, what would you say the state of our union is?
I would say that we're an anxious country right now. We've gone through so much. But I think, as he indicated, the strength of our country is always the people. And our history is that when things get tough, we stand up and we fight back. And I think the American people are prepared to do that right now.
A little bit of Bernie Sanders from the Colbert Report. Oh, my God. From The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, the night of the State of the Union address. Okay, now we're late. So who's mixing up the Dirty Debbies today?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
I still have Bernie playing there. Hey, Howie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. Thanks.
Oh, good. Were you hearing Bernie playing through your channel there?
Bernie?
Oh, see, before you came on, I was playing Bernie Sanders and his appearance on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert following the State of the Union address the other night. It was Bernie just in fine form as usual, making some points. And I
really said he doesn't like people.
yeah. But, you know, at least he's honest. Anyway.
No, I didn't hear it coming through the phone. I heard like a broken up version of the Chuck Schumer thing.
A broken up version? Maybe it's because I still had that audio playing. I just potted it down. I'm gonna hit it again. Tell me if you can. I'll just play a few seconds, but tell me if you can hear it.
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat?
Did you hear that?
Yes, I heard it.
Okay,
perfectly.
Cool.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes,
you had
finally got my fix of Chucky Schmucky.
Yeah, see, because I cut off the clip that I was playing because it was running late, but I just potted it down and I didn't stop it from playing. So you were hearing a mishmash of the two clips. I'm sorry. I thought I had it all fixed for you. I was ready for you to say, yay, I got my fix of the, you know, Dirty Debbie, it's corn thing. Yeah. By the way, somebody sent me, a listener on Twitter, and they copied you on it too. They sent it to both of us. A very quick video clip from the State of the Union address, and they titled it Chucky Loves Corn, and it was him standing up like alone. I you're not watching the video, but I have to play this so the listeners, the people who are watching on YouTube or another video stream can see it. It's a clip from the State of the Union. Chuck, I guess, thought
viral.
It went viral. Yes, it did. So you do know the clip I'm talking about. He thought that he was starting a standing ovation, but he was the only one standing, I guess. It's pretty funny, but hold on. Now I got my shot's not right. Bear with me. So while I get this together, you know, we can talk. Did you watch the State of the Union address?
I listened to it. I was in the car.
Okay. And what did you think?
Well, it's painful to hear him speaking. Because he's not good at reading.
He's a horrible speaker. Yeah, he's just. Yeah. That was my criticism too. Go ahead.
Yes, I mean, that's like cringy for me to hear that. So I felt kind of bad for him, but I wrote a post about it the next day. Mm-hmm. You know, there was some good stuff, some bad stuff. He obviously was making a plea for centrism and bipartisanship.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to ever learn that that's not going to happen.
Right.
He can't even get it together with Joe Manchin, who's, you know, theoretically in his own party.
Right. And Joe Manchin, did you notice, sat with the Republicans?
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah, of course.
He made a big show of it.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah. You know, it's just so frustrating. Yeah, it sounds like you have the same criticism that I did. And the things that we wanted to hear, we didn't. And the ones when he said we couldn't get this done and this done and this done, he didn't explain why. And I think you wrote about this, Howie. Put the blame on the Republicans who all in lockstep voted against all of it.
Yes. Put the Republicans, including Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin.
Well, of course. Of course.
But wouldn't affect all Republicans
right.
as well.
Right. Okay, now I got the video clip up. So if you're watching on YouTube, it's very quick. It's like 9 seconds. But here it is. It's worth the lead up to it. I got to back it up. Okay. So, and again, the listener who sent me this on Twitter called it Chucky Loves Corn. And there he's starting to stand up, clap, and realize nobody is around him.
People and left no one behind.
And now they stand up. It's just so awkward. I know I shouldn't make fun of him, but it's hard not to.
I've never had a problem making fun of him.
That I know. So, So there's some good news to talk about, Howie, right? Good news, mixed bag, I guess we should say. Mixed bag.
I mean, there's one really, really good news. I mean, you know how precious it is when we get like even one really, I don't mean one more Democrat, obviously. I mean, that's, you know, usually not a good sign. Or not a bad sign. It's just there.
Right.
But to get one super progressive, one person who's going to really, you know, be another one like Cori Bush or AOC mm-hmm. or Bernie.
Mm-hmm.
And we got that in Texas. So it's one of the literally one of the bluest districts in the country. It's brand new district. It was just manufactured. The Republicans squeezed as many Democrats as they could into this district, the 35th district, which goes from Austin down into San Antonio, but
right.
mostly it's in Austin. And literally, it's a district that just searches for Democrats. It just goes everywhere looking for Democrats, so that they won't be in Republican leaning districts, and they won't give any problem to all the surrounding districts.
Oh, because I know that Austin had been cut up before, so that a progressive never won the Austin area because they had it split up, and all those Democrats split into different Republican districts. So they changed it this time, and they put all the Democrats in one district.
Well, there are two, but yes, okay. This district particularly, this is the ultimate PACT district, what they call it, PACKED, mm-hmm. PACT. Mm-hmm. And what it means is they pack Democrats into the district. So so in any case, no Republican, no Republican can expect to run there and except. To make trouble. I mean, they make a fool of themselves. Only vanity candidate Republican would ever run in a district like this. And so it's all about the primary. And I know that the day before the primary, everybody on Greg Kassar, he's the progressive who won and who Blue America was backing. And Greg and his team were just praying that they would get 50% plus one vote. And they, I mean, to tell you the truth, one of the guys on his team, who's a very good friend of mine, told me he didn't think it was going to happen. He thought that, that Greg would probably get in the high 40s. He would still come at, there were several candidates, so he would still come in number one, but he would not be able to avoid the runoff. That was the thinking in the campaign. And instead, he went immediately over 60% and never got under 60%
wow.
the whole night of the counting. I can't remember exactly how much he won by, but it was gigantic.
Oh, it's huge. I have it. Wait, I have it here. It was, of course, I had
61,
it.
61, 62, 63,
no,
something like that, right?
73%. Oh, 61.2%. I was looking at county. 61.2%. And the second place finisher was at 15.6%.
And there was some fear that that second place finisher would get very close, but obviously he didn't. So the point that I'm making is we now have a super progressive who's going to set the tone. How do I know he's going to help to set a tone in Congress? Because he did on the Austin City Council. He was a member of the City Council. That's how Blue America knew about him.
Uh-huh.
He was spectacular in every way, just absolutely spectacular. He was the guy that was pushing all of the most progressive legislation, and then working to get it passed, working both with the public and with his colleagues. And he is so effective, smart, and a winner.
And his name is Greg Cesar?
Kassar.
Kassar.
Yeah.
Kassar.
C-A-S-A-R.
Kassar. Right.
Greg Gregorio Kassar.
Kassar. And the post you have up at Down with Tyranny was written by Mike Siegel, who'd run for a couple of cycles in Texas and never got there. Now, but he's saying the most. I'm sorry.
Introduce me to Greg.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool. Wow. Well, this is heartwarming. The downside is when looking at the raw numbers, there are only 41,000 votes reported. And the turnout on the Democratic side was really anemic.
Yes. Yes, the turnout, not just in that district, but all over Texas,
mm-hmm.
the Democrats did not turn out to vote.
And there's no excuse for that. So this was a primary, so at least, in this case, hopefully the most involved people did vote. In the general, everyone needs to vote. We can't spare a square. We can't spare a vote. Everybody needs to vote.
I've got news for you. The Republicans turned out in mass.
I heard.
Yep.
I heard.
I hope that that's not an indication of what's going to happen. I mean, I'm hearing that it's not an indication.
People
are telling me that it doesn't mean anything.
Okay, I hope not.
You're right.
A lot of people don't vote in primaries, and that's why the most radical candidates on the right turn out, because it is the people who are most involved, and now we know they've whipped things up into a fever pitch on the right. Well, we need to do that for the general, because the alternative is just unthinkable, especially with what's going on right now with Russia and Ukraine. If Trump gets back in, I don't even want to think. If he were in office now, I have no doubt that Trump would be supporting Putin.
That's right. And he probably would have tried to convince Zelensky in advance of this whole thing to give in. In fact, Trump would have given in to Zelensky's demands.
Without a doubt.
I'm sorry, not to Zelensky's, but to Putin's demands. I mean, Putin was saying he wanted a guarantee for perpetuity that Ukraine would never join NATO. And Trump would have certainly gone right along with it.
Right.
And beyond.
Right. Now, you know, I have mixed feelings about it. Last week I told you I was all excited. I was going to interview Steve Van Zandt tonight after our interview. Well, he had to move it up a day, so we recorded it last night. It's going to run tomorrow. And it's great. We had a great conversation. But he's very, very active on Twitter, by the way, at Stevie Van Zandt. And he is pissed about this. And he believes we need to go in and just take them out. Stop this, because this is senseless slaughter of innocent people. And he can't understand why we're actually, you know, sitting back and making speeches and talking about it while we're watching the Russians carpet bomb. Right. Well, we are. Right.
Well, sure we are. We're doing a tremendous. I mean, the U.S. just gave them 500 Stinger missiles. Those shoot down planes and helicopters. Mm-hmm. That is going to keep the Russians out of the sky. And Germany gave them another 500.
Yep.
So we're doing a lot more. And I don't know if you heard about this, but the U.S. is not freezing assets. The U.S. and the West in general are not freezing assets of Russian oligarchs. They are seizing assets. There's a difference between freezing and seizing. Freezing, you get it back. Seizing, you don't necessarily get it back. And in some ways, I'm pretty sure that some of them aren't going to get it back.
Uh-huh.
And the thing that was news today is that one of the oligarchs put a $1 million bounty on Putin's head, said, hey, any of you military guys that get anywhere near him, shoot him in the head and I'll give you $1 million.
Okay. Yes. Are they doing that? I also saw that there.
This happened in the last hour.
Wow.
So as far as I know, no one has shot him yet.
Okay. But do you know there's also, let me see if I can't find, I don't know where it is. I got a message from somebody a little while ago telling me that there's also like the Ukrainian government is offering Russians who basically come over a reward, a monetary reward of some
large one.
A large one, right.
Yeah.
It's like $1 million rubles or something.
But also something that one of the big Ukrainian news sites put up yesterday and took it down right away, but I saw it before it came down. It was very disturbing. And it said, we are no longer taking prisoners of Russians.
Yeah.
We are just shooting them.
You know, I saw that too, but that doesn't make any sense because go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I know. I agree. But I mean, the thing is that's a war crime.
Yeah, it is a war crime. But the other part of it is I've been seeing videos. There's a YouTube channel, UATV. It's Ukrainian English language news channel. And they have videos of captured Russian soldiers. Saying things like they didn't know, they were not told what was going on. They were told they were going to go on a peacekeeping mission. They were lied to about what their true mission was. One young, and these are young people. One kid said, I was born, whatever, it was 2000. He's younger than my daughter. And they're saying, first of all, my Ukrainian captors are treating me better than my Russian commanders did. One young man was able to call his mother and is talking to his mother and saying, Mom, they lied to us. They told me it was a peacekeeping mission and I'm coming in here as the aggressor. We're the aggressors here. You need to tell everybody what's going on and don't worry about me. I'm fine. They're treating me fine. But you need to spread the word about what's really happening.
If he's lucky, he'll never be going back to Russia because if he does, they'll shoot him.
Of course they will. And, you know, chances are they're going to find his mother and shoot her.
Meanwhile, they closed down the biggest kind of independent voice in Moscow in terms of radio.
Right. That's done. And the people have fled. who ran, I think it was a radio station, right?
Yep. Echo of Moscow. Is
right,
it called.
Right.
Yep. So it was owned by the biggest gas company, the oil, you know, the oil drillers, the biggest one. I can't remember the name, Gaz something. Anyway, so that shut down. So, yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, I hope you mentioned to Stevie Van Zandt something about nuclear weapons and why we're not getting into
right.
a fight with Russia.
Well, you know what? I wasn't going to get into it with him. I let him have his say. He's convinced that Putin is not going to go there. And I think that's a little naive. I think Putin is a madman. And as frightened as I was of Donald Trump having access to the nuclear button, that's how scared I am of Putin.
Yeah, the same kind of character.
That's right.
I mean, both of them are motivated by, you know, amassing great wealth. I mean, and Putin has been much more successful at it than Trump. Trump's a clown. But Putin has, you know, he's a classic plutocrat.
Yeah.
And he has amassed billions of dollars for himself, and they're spread all over the world. And what I said about freezing, the difference between freezing and seizing, mm-hmm. his assets are being seized. They're
good.
I mean, I'm sure he thought. This is just my thought. I feel positive that he thought his assets would be safe in Switzerland, and Switzerland said no.
Yep.
And seized all of his stuff.
And the whole world is saying no.
Switzerland froze. They didn't seize. They froze.
Okay, but the fact that Switzerland. A perennially neutral Switzerland is saying, hell no, is a big deal. Germany has also reversed course in giving all these arms and help to Ukraine because they try to stay out of that. They don't send weapons and they're stepping up. He's like a cornered predator, you know, I think who's going to lash out. That's what I'm scared of, is that
I am too.
He's going to be so cornered and realize this convoy of 40 miles long of tanks and military equipment that stalled outside of Kiev. The reason they're saying it's stalled is because they're running out of fuel. They have no food for all these soldiers that are driving these tanks and military vehicles, and they're stuck there. Now, somebody should go in and drop a bomb on them. But the thing is that then I worry about how he'll retaliate. And the fact that he's threatening. If anybody fires on us, that's World War III and it will be nuclear. Holy shit.
Yeah, he is threatening. That's yeah. And are you getting a lot of, I mean, you just told us what Stevie Van Zandt said.
Mm-hmm.
Are you getting a lot of pushback in the other direction from listeners who are just, you know, anti-war and think that we shouldn't be giving any kind of weapons?
Not from my listeners, honestly. The listeners seem to be, or if they do feel that way, they're not articulating it to me. Who I am hearing from are some of the, and boy, I hate this term and I can't believe I'm going to use it, the far left. The group, you know, like the, what are they called? Kevin Zeese's old group, the Stop the War Machine people, I had to block them yesterday because how dare we?
Did you say Kevin Zeese?
Yes, who's dead now, but it's his old organization that he found.
How about Eric Zeus? Is that the same?
No,
thing?
That's
or
a different person.
Or
no, that's a different. That's a different person. I know the name, but I can't.
He writes for Down with Tyranny.
Okay,
and he writes. You know, I mean, he seems very, very pro-Russian.
Yeah, oh, really?
Put it mildly.
Huh.
Well, he's certainly very, very anti-U.S., that's for sure.
You know, I'm getting it from those, the Matt Taibbis, you know, the Glenn Greenwald, that contingent who I used to somewhat agree with. They are so over the top, and I've said this before, you go so far to the left, you wind up coming around to the right. That's where Glenn Greenwald is now. That's where Matt Taibbi is. Now, I read a thread on Twitter from Jeremy Scahill, who I really respect. And what he did was call out all of the United States and NATO's war crimes for the past, you know, 50 years. And be it as it may, I'm not making any excuses for what we did in the past. We were wrong, you know, shouldn't have done that. But that has nothing to do with what's going on now. And the fact is, innocent people are being murdered. They're being carpet bombed. I mean, I was talking to my kid and saying, Ukraine, at least the western part of the nation, was just a democracy. People going about their business, and all of a sudden now they're having bombs dropped on their apartment buildings. It would be like they came to, you know, Miami Beach and dropped bombs. It's insane. And I honestly, Howie, I didn't think we'd ever see this day again. I thought we were too far past the days of a ground offensive. I thought if we're going to have another war, it's going to be nuclear and we'll probably all be wiped out.
But isn't what the Russians are doing in Ukraine, which is inexcusable, I'm not trying to excuse it in any way, shape or form, but isn't it, how is it different from what the U.S. did in Iraq, Syria and Afghanistan?
I don't know. You know, frankly, I don't know. And that's something that needs to be dealt with.
Those are Muslims.
Oh, right.
And these are Christians. And it freaks me out that there's so much. I mean, I am very sympathetic to the Ukrainians. My ancestors came from Ukraine.
Right.
I mean, I'm extremely sympathetic, not just because of my ancestors coming from there, but I feel for them. But I felt for the people in Syria. I felt for the people in Afghanistan,
yep.
That's for sure, where I spent a lot of time.
Yeah,
I never spent any time in Iraq. But, when people are getting bombed and their lives are upended, it doesn't matter if they're Christian or they're Jewish or they're Muslim.
No, it does not.
They're people.
They're people. They're human beings.
It seems like humanity shouldn't be denied based on someone's religion or color or
any of anything.
These are all humans.
Exactly.
And we wiped out the U.S. and the Russians both wiped out whatever there was of Afghanistan. I mean, the entire infrastructure was completely destroyed in that country, and the U.S. did the same thing in Iraq, and a whole contingent of countries did it in Syria.
I know.
Now,
in Syria,
Ukraine.
In Syria, I got to say, Assad is a, you know, he's a bad guy. He's fucking over his people. But take
and displacing millions of people.
I know. You know, I always thought we should put the leaders, put Putin in a coliseum with al-Assad and let them fight it out to the death. Leave the innocent people alone. And yes, do I think the U.S. has done really shitty, horrible, crimes against humanity in the past? Absolutely. And that is something that needs to be reckoned with, but it has nothing to do with this today.
Right. And when you say the past, we're not just talking about, the Civil War times or something.
No. Yep.
We're talking about extremely recently.
That's
like
right.
Just a couple of years ago.
Well, that's why I read Jeremy Scahill's Twitter thread, because I agree with him. But that shouldn't preclude us from trying to do whatever we can to help the poor people of Ukraine who are being murdered.
Absolutely.
Oh, we agree. Somebody in the chat room said, I finally agree with Howie on something.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
The person in the chat room, they were not for Greg Kassar. They were from right-wing candidates.
No, not
to your show.
That's MRD585. It said, I finally agree with Howie on something. I think it's everything today.
Right-winger? Will you have right-wingers?
No, I do not. They don't last very long. they do not last very long here. That is for sure. Oi, Howie, it's what a day. Well, tomorrow we have something to look forward to, because I do talk war with Stevie Van Zandt. Then we veer off and we talk about everything from Bruce to Southside Johnny to music to garage bands to the Rascals and Dion. And it's a wonderful
Rascals. No,
Steve Van Zandt got Felix Cavalieri and the Rascals back together again and mounted a Broadway show with them.
He wasn't originally.
Oh, no. He was just such a fan of theirs that he got them back together and put them and staged this great show.
I was living on Long Island. I was going to school on Long Island when they were gigantic there.
Yeah.
And they were, how certain things become a symbol. They were a symbol of the wrong side of everything.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And they had a couple of good songs.
Yes, they did. I loved them when I was a kid. But anyway, we talk about everything. Arts education in the schools and cannabis. He's now in the cannabis business. And, of course, The Sopranos and Lilyhammer. And it's a wonderful conversation. It really it was what I needed yesterday, and I think we'll all be able to take something from it to kick off a weekend tomorrow, to get our mind off the horror that's unfolding before our eyes, because it is.
Yeah.
Oh, Howie, hopefully, well, at least there was a little bit of good news out of Texas. Now we just need to get people to vote.
Oh, it was more good news out of Texas. Yeah. We didn't get
Right. Cisneros is now in a runoff with Henry Cuellar, and she can beat him, right?
Right, because the other person who ran was actually slightly to the left of her.
Oh, really?
So when you add up what the person who was slightly to the left of her plus her, when you add that up, that's way more than Cuellar got. So hopefully that other woman, Tanya, is going to endorse her. In fact, I sent a note to Jessica and her manager today and said, have you worked out an endorsement? And if not, please let me know and I'll help you.
Oh, good.
I know this other woman.
Oh, good. Well, that would be great. I didn't realize there was somebody even more progressive than her. This is encouraging. Two strong progressive voices. One is definitely the Democratic nominee, and the other one is this close. The runoff is in May, right? So vote. If you're in Texas, if you're in that district, vote. And get a friend to vote, too. And I understand there were problems.
It's going to be all about turnout.
It's all
and
about turnout.
And that race was fairly good. It was an exception to the rest of Texas. South Texas turned out.
Oh, good. Well,
yeah.
Baby steps. And we have to we have to build back slowly. I don't ever want to hear those words together again. Anyway, Howie Klein, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you next week.
I already did.
So I'll have a good time listening again tomorrow. All right. Take care, Howie. Bye. All right. With that, we're done. It's been a day. And tomorrow, well, come ready to, you know, enjoy and to segue into the weekend, because I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. I think you will. All right. I'll leave you with the news, because there's plenty of it. And I'll see you tomorrow. And send out thoughts of peace. I guess that's what I can do. I don't pray, so I send out peaceful thoughts. You do what you do. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
As the Russian war on Ukraine enters its second week, more than 1 million refugees have already fled the nation, according to the UN. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is pleading for international assistance as Russian bombs are hitting residential areas. Russian strikes hit at least 3 schools and damaged a cathedral and shops Wednesday in Ukraine's second largest city, Kharkiv. In the port city of Mariupol, electricity and water are out, and the International Criminal Court in The Hague, Netherlands, said that it would launch a war crime investigation following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The United Nations General Assembly voted 141-5 on Wednesday to condemn Russia for the invasion. The resolution calling for Russia to, quote, immediately cease its use of force against Ukraine and withdraw all of its military forces. 35 nations, including India, Cuba, and China, abstained. Only Belarus, Syria, North Korea, and Eritrea were the only countries to vote with Russia against the measure. President Zelensky's office said Wednesday that Ukraine's forces were still fighting around the town of Kherson, despite Russia's claim that it had taken complete control of the port city on the Black Sea. The mayor said Russian soldiers had entered the city and that he asked them not to shoot civilians. Ugh. Meanwhile, Russia's 40-mile-long convoy of tanks and other military equipment seems to still be stalled outside of Kyiv. Some reports saying there's mass confusion and that they're running out of food and fuel. Good. Russia's defense ministry acknowledged for the first time extensive casualties, saying that 498 Russian troops had been killed and 1,597 injured. Ukraine said they killed 5,840 Russian troops, and they put the civilian death toll at 2,000. None of this should be happening. President Zelensky, meanwhile, has been sending out regular messages via video. On Wednesday, he called out the Russians for bombing the sacred Holocaust memorial site at Babyn Yar, as Putin claims his invasion is to, quote, denazify Ukraine. Give me a break.
Greetings, Ukrainian people. The seventh day of the terrible war. We were all bombed in Kyiv last night, and we all died again in Babyn Yar from a missile strike. Although the whole world promises constantly, never again. For any normal people who knows history, Babyn Yar is a special part of Kyiv, a special part of Europe, place of prayer, place of memory of 100,000 people who were killed by the Nazis. Why was it bombed? This is already beyond the bounds of humanity. Such a missile strike indicates that for many people in Russia, our Kyiv is completely alien. They don't know anything about our capital, about our history. But they have orders to erase our history, erase our country, erase us all. All the Jews of the world, don't you see what is happening? It is very important that millions of Jews around the world do not remain silent now. Nazism is born in silence. Therefore, scream about the killing of civilians, about the murders in Ukraine.
Closer to home, big news Wednesday evening of a court filing by the House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol. The 61-page filing is part of an attempt to gain access to emails from the so-called lawyer, John Eastman, the guy who the committee says helped Trump orchestrate the plot. House members have also signaled they may make a criminal referral to the Justice Department about Trump, depending on their findings. Please. To date, no top advisors around Trump have been charged for crimes related to the attack, though the Justice Department has charged more than 750 people who participated in the riot. Well, on Wednesday, the jury trial in the first case related to the January 6th attack on the Capitol has finally begun. Assistant U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Nessler told the jury that the defendant, Guy Reffitt of Texas, boasted that he, quote, lit the match that started the fire in the riot aiming to block lawmakers from certifying the former guy's election loss to President Biden. Reifert's court-appointed attorney told jurors that his client didn't go into the Capitol and that the case against him was based on, quote, bragging and a lot of hype. However, in another January 6th case with potentially huge ramifications, a member of the far-right Oath Keepers extremist group by the name of Joshua James on Wednesday became the first person to plead guilty to seditious conspiracy in connection with the riot. That's a big deal. So remember the former guy's wall, his impenetrable wall at our southern border? Well, according to unpublished U.S. Customs and Border Protection maintenance records obtained by the Washington Post, Mexican smugglers have sawed through chunks of that wall 3,272 times over the past 3 years. Nice. The government shelled out $2.6 million between 2019 and 2021 to repair the damage as the wall was frequently breached with cheap power tools like angle grinders and demolition saws. America, baby. And finally, because for some reason, Florida's sorry excuse for a governor appears to be the Republicans' backup choice for a 2024 presidential nominee if the former guy somehow doesn't run, you need to know who this sad excuse for a human being really is. Ron DeSantis was stepping up to the podium at an event at the University of South Florida where a group of high school students, standing as human props, were waiting, mostly safely wearing masks. In typical rude, condescending fashion, DeSantis walked up and said,
"You do not have to wear those masks. I mean, please take them off. Honestly, it's not doing anything, and we got to stop with this COVID theater. So if you want to wear it, fine, but this is ridiculous."
Oh, can we hear that exasperated sigh again, please? Ugh. Please, America, know who this man is. Send Ron DeSantis to the cornfield.
You're a bad man. You're a very bad man. I got the
news. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.